decided it really didn't matter. I was here on this alien world. There were dinosaurs. And I had beautiful women to protect. As the mystery orb traveled through the sky, numerous flying bugs began glowing and dancing in the grove below me. Some were pinpoints of white light, like tiny candles drifting on the wind. Many yellows twinkled on and off, reminding me of fireflies from back home. But I was truly surprised when a nearby bush started glowing with bright neon green. A crow-sized firefly crawled up through the branches, and the baseball-sized green bulb on its underside illuminated my guard area like a street lamp. I worried that the glowing insect might be hostile, so I stopped my shifting feet and froze in place. The bug seemed to consider me for a moment before taking flight and buzzing out into the forest of sequoias. More of its kind showed up, and little green suns quickly created a multicolored light show. When two of the insects came together, their lights flashed, as if saying hello to each other. As their numbers grew, the flares became even more dazzling. Over the next hour or so, I saw several parties of green revelers strobing their lights on and off in complex patterns. A group of 40 or 50 bugs hung out nearby, and I imagined I was at a prehistoric rave. The pterodactyl flapped its wings from time to time, as if annoyed by the light show. I pictured her as an angry old woman, complaining about those damned kids and their bothersome nighttime activities. I, however, was glad the lights kept me awake and helped me keep an eye on that mean old lady in the tree. Jinx saw her, too. The little blue dinosaur slept curled up just behind my feet. I looked down to make sure he was okay every so often, to distract my tired brain and heavy eyes. When the giant lightning bugs finally ended their light show, I figured it was close to midnight. The white moon had moved higher in the sky, which was my only clue to the passage of time. The second moon also began its ascent, and it added a red tint to everything. The already strange world became even more alien as the red glow overpowered the softer white of the first moon. For a short time, I was distracted as I watched the colors change. To help stay awake, I repeatedly checked my dead wristwatch out of habit. How was I going to know when it was time to wake up Galmine? I dwelled on that problem, mostly to keep my mind busy, but my droopy eyes soon became a critical issue. Even shifting my feet and admiring nature didn't help. I flicked on my IQ to combat the drowsiness. Maybe I could stay awake by exploring the machine jammed inside my head. I turned again to those role-playing games. If the aliens gave me a user interface, there was probably a scenario explanation or quest or something to explain what I was supposed to be doing. I just had to find it. The interface was a model of efficiency. My name was at the top, and there were a few tabs in a row underneath. One advantage to the simplicity, however, was that it was easy to see when something new appeared. There was one extra tab since the last time I checked. The name on it said Assets. Structures, 0. Creatures, 1. Women, 0. What the hell? Structures was kind of obvious, but I hadn't seen anything close to a structure since I'd arrived on this planet. I figured that would change once we got down to construction. But why would it even matter? Did I win a prize for building the most structures? Who was I playing against? How big did I have to make one before it would count? I could think of a dozen questions, but no answers. The word creatures was a bit more interesting. The number 1 was highlighted so I could click it. The next screen appeared as a simple spreadsheet list, but only the first row was filled in. The computer displayed Jinx's species identification, his sex, as well as a field for his nickname. When I hovered over his name, it gave an option to change it. I was surprised the aliens would bother with such customization. But the strangest term was women. My man brain made me click on every letter of the word, hoping there was more explanation behind it. Would I be getting women for being on the planet? Did I have to find them? Were they handed out like spoils for killing dinosaurs? Were they the prizes for building structures or upping my creature count? I mentally rubbed my hands together as I dreamed of the possibilities, but soon realized it was my imagination getting away from me. Sure, it would be cool to have that ticker say, women, 10, or whatever, but I had never managed to maintain a consistent rating of women 1 back on Earth, and I was pretty stoked when Suzanne was my 1 for those few months, too. But I lived in a cave, with 3 women already, and they didn't show up in my stats. Shouldn't I have a 3 next to women if that's how it worked? I tapped around the IQ using my eye movements. The long night gave me time to practice, so I didn't have to use my hands. To my relief, even that basic level of mental occupation seemed to keep me from falling asleep. When Galmine came out and tapped me in the middle of the night, I realized it was much like computer games back on Earth. I'd completely lost track of time while dicking around with it.
"Hey, my turn,"
Galmine whispered as she nudged me.
"All right,"
I whispered as I reviewed my night. I made it through my shift without falling asleep, and other than the occasional cricket, the forest had fallen silent while I passed the time inside the IQ. Even old Lady Pterodactyl seemed to be zonked. She hadn't made a peep since the bug stopped blinking. For my first night, I was satisfied I'd kept a good watch. I tried to hand her my spear, but she didn't take it. Instead, she held my arm with both of hers, got on her tiptoes, and stretched toward my face.
"I couldn't throw it anyway,"
she whispered in my ear.
"I can shout, though."
Galmine's breath was hot against my ear, and I experienced a shiver of pleasure cascade down my spine. She pulled away, but our faces were now inches apart. Even though she was backlit from the fire inside the cave, her emerald eyes seemed to glow green in the darkness. She looked down at my lips, and I felt myself begin to lean toward her. My heart was hammering in my chest like a marching band's bass drum.
"Oh,"
she moaned softly as her hands came up to touch my mouth gently.
"You are so handsome and warm and hard and soft. If we kiss, we will continue on to other things. You won't get much sleeping done and I won't get much guarding done."
Yeah, I said. It was like Galmine had cast a spell on me, and I shook my head to clear the lust out of my brain. What was I thinking? There was a lot of work to do tomorrow, and the other 2 women were sleeping only 12 feet away. I couldn't have a make-out session with Galmine right now, even though I really wanted to.
"But later, I would like that,"
she smiled.
"You would?"
I whispered with a bit of surprise. The gray-skinned woman looked like a busty supermodel, and I couldn't quite believe her words.
"Of course," she whispered. "I like you, and want to feel you inside of me."
Wait, like sex? As soon as the words left my mouth, I wanted to pull them back and beat myself over the head with them. It was quite possibly the stupidest thing I've ever said, and I already knew what her answer would be. I was being such a creeper, and I hadn't meant it.
"No,"
she said with a slight smile, and I felt my stomach drop.
"Lovemaking. Much better than sex."
Yeah, I guess it. My tongue tried to knot itself up in my mouth. This couldn't possibly be happening, and I almost expected Beatrice to call me on my radio or for my alarm clock to wake me up from this dream.
"But we have so much work to do now,"
she whispered urgently.
"You need your rest. Please go to sleep. I'll watch over the camp."
Galmine let go of my arms and stood normally. Then she gestured toward the inside of the cave.
"Go. I'll be fine. I've done this a bunch."
"Thanks, Galmine," I said as I fought against the flurry of different emotions. Part of me wondered if I'd imagined our conversation, but I kept repeating her words over in my head as I stumbled my way to the fire. Galmine had just thrown a couple big sticks into the dying flames, and they came crackling alive as I sprawled out on the floor. The smoke billowed over me like a familiar blanket, and I coughed in the acrid haze as quietly as I could. The extra flames cast their light on the sleeping shape across the fire from me. Sheila breathed evenly in what I hoped was a very deep sleep. She was curled up next to the fire in a cat-like pose. Or maybe she was chilly, though it was still 1,000,000 degrees outside. A part of me wanted to wrap my arms around her to see if she was cold, but that was my exhaustion talking, or possibly it was the arousal from the conversation I'd had with Galmine. My final thoughts were about crafting a simple bed to avoid being on the ground, but the hard ground didn't really bother me. I fell asleep about 2 seconds after my head touched the cave floor. and it felt like only 4 seconds had passed before I heard someone calling my name.
Victor, wake up. It is morning.
Sheila's Aussie accent was still sexy as hell, but the early hour muted some of the charm. I was on my stomach with my arms folded under my head. I'd used my leather hat as a pillow, and I turned over to see Jinx pecking at the ground near my elbow.
I'm up,
I replied with a tired voice.
I just had the shortest night of sleep of my life, but I'm ready to go.
I rolled over to grab my hat, and my position on the ground gave me the perfect view of the undersides of Sheila's bikini-covered breasts. It was entirely accidental that my eyes went right to them, and since I didn't want to stare at her, I distracted myself by being deeply interested in sweeping the dirt off each of my pant legs. My tan uniform pants also had a second problem. Seeing a sexy woman next to my bed first thing in the morning meant that it was 2x4 hammering time again.
I've already gotten our water for the morning, Sheila began. I also have some leaves for making our cordage.
Wait. You went without me? I was really awake now. I then noticed my socks and boots were drying next to the fire, but I couldn't recall taking them off. I used it as another distraction while I laced them up.
Don't worry, Victor. I'm rarely bothered in the morning. I think the forest is asleep when the sun first rises.
The thought of danger worked wonders to wake me up, and I looked around the cave. Galmine slept peacefully a few feet to my right. Trell wasn't visible, but I had to assume she was in her nook and not outside the cave being helpful. In other words, everything looked as normal as it could be in this abnormal situation.
Asleep, you say?
I asked as I wondered why we'd go out at any other time. I got to my feet and brushed the sleeves of my shirt. Can we go out again to get more water now? Shouldn't we make our runs only in the morning?
I've thought about it many times, but there are not enough safe hours in the day to get anything done.
Sheila replied,
I could not do multiple morning water runs until you joined us. When we have more clay pots, we can each carry one and get water for the whole day. But you are correct. It would be better that way.
Thanks, I said, finally looking at her. I tried to fix my untucked shirt, but chuckled at the futility of it. After 2 days in dino hell, my uniform looked like I'd gotten it wet, rolled it into a ball, then put it back on without ironing it. Wearing this mess to the animal shelter would have been an automatic write-up. The plan was for both of us to get water and find materials to make rope, I said as I kneaded some of the worst creases in my shirt. Thanks for grabbing that stuff already. Let's take a drink while you show us how to make the cordage, then we can go out and get clay, collect firewood, and catch some fish for breakfast.
How will we bring the fish, clay, and firewood back at the same time? Sheila asked.
She had a point. I knew firsthand how hard it was to carry something over a long distance. Having a pot full of clay would be even heavier, so how the hell would we carry fish? Back home, we'd carry them in a cooler or a net if we didn't have to go far. I'd also seen people at the beach with multiple fish hooked on stringers. You're going to show us how to make cord, right? I asked. That'd be perfect to carry the fish.
Yes. Between the two of us and a loop of cord, we can get it all back.
Sheila agreed, and her yellow cat eyes studied me again with a strange intensity. Out of habit, I checked my watch again. Then, seeing it was dead for the 100th time, I yanked it off and put it in my pocket. I was tempted to throw it in the fire, but I wasn't ready to let it go forever.
Shit! We should just go now if the morning is safer. We have so much to do.
If there was a safer time to be outside, I didn't want to waste a drop of it.
Victor, Sheila replied with a sympathetic glance. We have time. You have to eat before going back out. We both do.
We have a lot to do,
I said as I mentally went down the list of all that had to happen today. Make cordage, get clay, fish for breakfast, find firewood, make an axe, cut down trees, make the turnstile, start the fort, study Jinx, guard the cave, then get more water and food. Whew, the list for survival here was endless.
Will it help if we eat some berries while I demonstrate how to make cordage?
Sheila asked. She was being practical, and the mere mention of berries was a reminder that I was starving. As long as we ate while doing something useful, it wouldn't delay us too bad.
Yeah, we could do that,
I allowed. But you also have to promise me from now on you'll wake me when you get up. I want to be ready any time you go out of the cave. You know, in case you need help to get back in.
I will, Victor, Sheila replied. But do not worry. Trell was watching the cave today while I was gone.
No, Sheila. You offered me an extra drink of water,
Trell groaned from behind her curtain.
Since I was already awake, I decided I wanted to sun myself on the ramp. Now that the male is done sleeping in, I'll stay back here in my room. Thank you very much.
I had hoped Trell would wake up on the right side of the bed and be in a better mood around me, but it didn't look like that was going to happen today. I'm sure Galmine's tired, but we need her for the Quidditch lesson, I said to Sheila. I wasn't going to bother replying to Trell anymore. It was obvious she wasn't going to like me, so she could go fuck herself. Sheila and Galmine were plenty nice and seemed to appreciate me helping them.
I will wake her,
Sheila volunteered.
She scares easily while asleep.
She walked to Galmine, bent to one knee next to her, and rubbed the sleeping woman along the top half of her arm.
Galmine, we need you,
Sheila whispered with surprising tenderness. The gray-skinned woman smiled at Sheila's voice without opening her eyes. Galmine stretched her arms and legs as fully as she could, looking like a ballerina on her side. Despite her stony gray skin, Galmine's body seemed soft and pliable. The gorgeous woman continued her stretch for half a minute and gradually added some innocent moaning with her movements. As soon as she was done, the green-eyed woman sat up and looked at us.
Good morning,
I said to Galmine.
Oh, sorry, I lost myself a little,
she replied as she smiled broadly.
Stretching my body in the morning makes me feel amazing. Do you like to feel amazing in the morning, Victor?
Yeah. I gulped as my eyes roamed across her breasts, stomach, hips, and thighs. She was drop-dead gorgeous.
And good morning to you. This fireside bed feels so good and is so warm, I hate leaving it. Did you sleep well?
Galmine batted her silver eyelashes at me.
Yeah,
I lied. It made sense that a woman with stone skin would enjoy bedding on rock, but I sure as hell didn't. Though I went out like a light, my sleep was about as comfortable as rolling around on broken glass all night. I had sore muscles and joint aches in places that never bothered me in my life. Still, watching her stretch did wonders for my mood. It was pretty much impossible not to smile at anything she did.
I'm really looking forward to today, Galmine said with cheer. We have so many exciting things to do.
The stone woman seemed to go from a dead sleep right to her normal bubbly mode. Even though it was our first night together, I was confident she didn't have a bad side of the bed. Once she was satisfied Galmine was awake, Sheila went over to Trell's curtain and reached behind it. At first I thought she was going to yank out Trell by one of her hoop earrings, but instead she pulled out a giant leaf that was folded to look like a green plastic bag. Sheila set it next to the fire ring and spread it out, revealing a big pile of round berries and yellowish fruits, sort of like wrinkly pears. Galmine had mentioned the fruit and berries were stored in Trell's area. Jinx appeared as if he was ready to eat breakfast with us, but Sheila brushed him away with a little smile. He chirped a few times in what had to be a complaint about his horrible treatment.
Eat as much as you need, Victor, Sheila offered as she pointed at the berries. I will try to eat them as well. This will give us energy until we can catch some more nutritious food.
Great. Thanks for the berries. I'll snack on them while you show us the cordage, but then we have to be going. We have a ton of stuff to do. I didn't want to sound frantic, but we really did have a shitload of tasks ahead of us today, tomorrow, and for the next 30-ish days. If we wanted to live past the angry orange bird invasion, we needed to get a move on.
I will get the leaves we need,
Sheila replied as she stepped over to the woodpile where she kept them. I sat down next to Galmine and laughed inwardly at the contrast between us. Her gray skin seemed to glow in the morning like it was fresh and new. My outward appearance was a case study in uniform infractions. The silver-haired woman cozied up next to me while we both leaned over the mixture of berries and fruits, and I remembered the words she whispered to me last night. She wanted to make love with me, not just have sex. That sentence was a one-song playlist on endless repeat deep inside my man brain. I shuddered as her arm rubbed against mine. But she made no further advances.
Which of these are good?
I asked Galmine, partially to be polite and partially so that I could distract myself with small talk. Her perfume was stronger than I remembered, and strangely calming.
"The dark blue ones are fabulous,"
she said as she popped one of the acorn-sized blueberries in her mouth.
"Yeah, they're damned good,"
I agreed after biting into one. The berries looked like blueberries, but tasted more like strawberries. While I crammed in more berries, Sheila brought over a bunch of leaves that looked like long, skinny palm fronds. Then she sat down in front of us.
"So," Sheila began, "we make cordage by stripping long leaves down to raw strips of tough, stringy material. Then we wrap two of those strands in a spiral so they become very durable. On my world, we use a tough grass that grows taller than I can reach. Here, I've not found such grass, but these smaller plants are very strong. They should work perfectly."
Sheila gave one of the leaves to me and another to Galmine. They were about 3 feet long and 3 inches wide when laid flat. They reminded me of yucca plant leaves, only not as pointy.
"That's it?"
I asked. "Rip and twist?" I thought it would be a lot more complicated.
"It is very simple,"
Sheila countered. I chewed some more berries while studying the leaf. It had definite stripes along the length. It was almost as if the leaf was made of dozens of hidden segments lined up next to each other. I made a clumsy effort to pull at the outermost one, but it took me a while, because I didn't have sharp fingernails like Sheila. The blonde woman made short work of her demo leaf, popped some berries into her mouth, and then focused on Galmine and my progress. Her grimace made me think that she didn't really like the berries. In fact, her mechanical chewing reminded me of how I must have looked when Mom forced me to eat peas at dinner time when I was a kid. Sheila caught me watching her and smiled. Her teeth were blue, and I let out a light chuckle.
"You have blue teeth," I said as I opened up my mouth to show her mine.
"Oh!"
Sheila gasped as she shut her mouth. I was surprised she was so bashful, but Trell interrupted before I could make another comment.
"The male's eating habits are as appalling as his unsatisfactory uniform appearance,"
Trell said while standing next to her half-opened curtain.
"But I guess now that we've made him a part of our group, he can reveal who he really is. A slob. His supposed expertise leaves much to be desired."
I was stunned at her blunt words, but I held my tongue rather than snap back at her. She had some issue I needed to figure out. But in the meantime, I definitely remembered this part of the Animal Control Department training videos on how to deal with difficult residents. Sometimes it's best just to let them be mad for a while. I picked up a second leaf and got busy tearing off the strips. Sheila also began her next one. Galmine was still working on her first, but was nearly done. When I didn't reply to Trell, she groaned with annoyance and stepped out of her alcove. She kicked off her fancy sandals, and my eyes went right to her two bare human feet as she walked to the water pot. The responsible part of my brain advised me to look away from her antics, but my eyes had a mind of their own.
"I must quench my desire,"
she declared while giving me a sideways glance.
"For water,"
she added as an afterthought. My man brain went into record mode as she casually bent over to grab the water jug. Her thin dress hadn't gotten soaked with the sweat of the day, so the material hung loosely from her curves rather than sticking to them. Even so, the garment strained under the weight of her breasts. I fully expected her to say, "Oopsie," and spill the water over her front just to further taunt me.
"You do realize you have yet to close your blue mouth, man?"
Trell said with smug satisfaction after she had taken a drink.
"So rude. You're easy to read and even easier to manipulate."
Damn.
She was right. I closed my stupid mouth when the spell of her beauty was short-circuited by the power of her insult. I thought about a million curses to throw back at her, but I also knew I didn't have time for it right now. We were at the early build parts of our plan, and if there was anything I knew from real-time strategy games, it was that the first few minutes of a match were the most important. I could waste time telling Trell off, or I could finish making rope and accomplish something useful, then go get clay, food, and firewood. One activity was going to help us survive for the next month, the other wouldn't. Trell took her drink and set the pot back down without drama. I didn't watch her, though. Instead, I picked around in the fruit and tried one of the pears. It was bitter, which was so fitting.
Will you be joining us?
Sheila asked of Trell.
What do you think?
Trell replied.
I'll be in my quarters, listening for the sounds of rescue ships.
She sauntered to her nook with her flowing dress hanging from her hips. Her legs were folded into their wings configuration, which counteracted some of my attraction to that perfect ass. I didn't find the spider legs completely repulsive this time, so I guess I was starting to get used to them. Sheila sighed as the spider woman pulled the curtain shut once more, but brightened again when she saw me finish tearing apart my second leaf frond.
Excellent job, you two. Galmon, you have a gift for this. Your cuts are perfect.
Sheila held up one of Galmine's pieces. It was a thin, yellowish strand about the width of a shoestring.
My fingers are not as flexible as yours, Galmine said with a pleasant laugh. But I can do this all day long. It's kind of fun.
It wasn't anything close to my idea of fun. I could do it all day long if I had to, but by dinner time, my fingers would probably be covered in blisters. I pulled off a few more strands and laid them next to each other so I could get a much better look at the makeup of the plant. The green meat of the leaf is what seemed to hold the strands together. If I had a sturdy comb, I could have brushed the cords right out of the leaf. That gave me an idea. I held my half-torn leaf with both hands about 6 inches from each other and then ran it along one of the edges of a rock in the fire ring. The rough surface immediately stripped away the green crap and left me with a wear spot in the middle of my leaf. Only the stronger strands were left holding the two halves together. I quickly yanked the exposed strands, starting in the middle. I was done with my leaf in about half the time it took Sheila to do hers. Galmine was much slower doing it Sheila's way, because she didn't seem to have quite the same dexterity.
Hey, check this out, I said with excitement. If I rub the leaf just right, I can expose the strands better than using my fingers. This might help Galmine go faster.
I illustrated the method by repeating my experiment. It really did make things quicker.
I'd love to try it,
Galmine said as she scooted toward the fire ring. A few minutes later, she was ripping leaves on the rock and setting the strips in a pile next to her. With the new technique, she was able to go about as fast as Sheila and me. It was a definite improvement.
This is great, Victor, she said to me with mischievous eyes. Thank you. My fingers can be so clumsy.
She paused and looked up at me and bit her lip.
With some things.
I remembered her sexy whispers, but I forced my mind back to the tasks at hand and tried to ignore the sexual tension between us. We really had to get moving.
Let me show you how to twist a few.
Sheila picked up one of the strands and began to roll it between her fingers.
Then you'll be able to work on these while Victor and I are gone.
Sheila probably sensed my impatience because my knee bounced with nervous energy throughout her whole presentation.
The strength of the rope comes from twisting these flat strands so they become rounded, Sheila said. First, by starting in the middle, we can rotate the strands so tight that it creates a natural loop, like this.
She rolled it in such a way a loop appeared at the halfway point. It reminded me of a lone shoelace if you tied a knot in the middle and then lined up the two halves of the lace so they were side by side.
From here, just twist the two dangling ends together like a braid. It is simple to add in additional strands when you're near the end of any length.
Sheila spun the two ends together and added in new pieces with remarkable speed as the twist neared the ends. In 5 minutes, she'd spun a couple feet of cord. She then looked to us to do it on our own. I rolled my strand as she had done. It took a few tries to get the loop right, but once I did, the twisting went fast. The concept seemed simple enough, but I added a couple additional sections as practice. When I was done with the first foot-long cord, I watched Galmine's methodical movements. I wanted to claw my face at how slow she went, but I couldn't immediately see a way to improve her technique, and Sheila seemed satisfied Galmine had the method down.
Hey, Sheila, if we join our two pieces together, it'll be long enough for us to use for carrying fish back.
I picked from my pile of strands and began to twist new ones onto my foot-long sample of cord. Sheila and I worked a few more minutes to lengthen our sample ropes. When it looked like we had enough, Sheila tied mine with hers so it was about 4 feet long. During that same time, Galmine was only able to finish her first 6 inches.
This should be plenty. Would you agree?
Sheila asked me. For a few fish? Sure, I replied as I took the cord from her and stuffed it in my large front pocket. Thanks for helping, ladies, I said as I jumped to my feet. Are we good to go? I want to get to the lake as soon as possible. I was so happy to have one of our team members doing something useful like making cords, but it was going to be a while before she finished her one-foot demo piece. That left Sheila and me standing around. As Beatrice always said, "You got time to lean, you got time to clean." I wasn't anxious to clean, but her words did have some wisdom for getting shit done.
"Yes, thank you, Sheila. Go, you two. I can do this. Don't forget clay when you're out. If you can keep it wet, that'll save me from using all our water to mix it."
Galmine pointed to our half-gallon supply of water. We'd need more water if we were going to be making pottery, so it made sense to drink the rest of our supply and then refill it while we were at the lake. But we couldn't carry water, clay, fish, and firewood at the same time. Something would have to be pushed back. Since the first three were all found at the lake, the firewood had to get the metaphorical axe. We'd find that later in the day. "We should all drink the pot empty," I suggested while pointing to the water container. "We can bring back more water while we get the clay to save time." Part of it was maximizing efficiency, but I was also so thirsty I could easily down the whole thing myself.
"It would be a little farther to carry it from the lake, but we'll already be moving slow with the clay, fish, and firewood," Sheila said in agreement.
"Let's save the firewood for later, Sheila," I said as I shared my thought process. "We have enough stored here in the cave to get us by. I'd rather get the supplies we need at the lake in one shot. Next time, we'll make a handcart." The wheel was the simplest machine there was. I was sure I could make one at some point.
"I agree,"
Sheila replied with a tiny smile. "All right. Everyone needs to hurry and drink some more water." I shot looks to each of the three women.
"Pass,"
Trell immediately responded.
"I'll take a little," Galmine said.
I picked it up and carried it to her, but she only took a small sip before returning to her task. The pot had about an inch of water left, and I brought it over to the beautiful Catwoman.
"Thank you,"
Sheila said after she took a small drink. "That's all you want?" I asked, amazed she hadn't taken at least half of what was left.
"I require no more,"
she replied. "Okay. Let me finish this and we can go," I said. Down the hatch. I slammed every last drop of what was left. I felt pretty good with a little food and water in my stomach, but I was left with a disturbing aftertaste because Trell hadn't voluntarily taken some. Why did she spend so much time being angry with me? Yes, she drank water a little while ago, but that didn't feel like the real reason she refused more. Her issues with me were affecting her judgment.
"Can you remind me of Trell's full name?" I said quietly to Sheila.
"Trelly Deal Eria, Duchess of Family Eria."
She seemed unsurprised that I would ask such a question. Though it would cost me a few extra minutes, I hoped I'd found the source of her anger. I didn't think I was the least bit rude to her, but there was one thing I should have done better. If she wanted me to call her by her full name, I'd do it. The show of respect seemed a minor investment with a potentially huge reward. I repeated it over and over in my head and noted that it kind of rhymed. When I knew I had her name memorized, I returned just inside the entrance. "Thanks, Galmine, for helping out. And thank you, Trell Edil Eria, Duchess of Family Eria, for watching over her while we're out." I happened to see Jinx near the fire. He'd gotten himself a big blue berry and pecked into it like a little jackhammer. "And watch out for Jinx, if you can."
"Bye-bye,"
Galmine replied with a friendly wave.
"We will."
Trell said nothing from behind her screen, which was much better than her normal insult, so I took it as a marginal victory. Sheila and I walked down the ramp, through the bushes and rocks, until we stood at the edge of the grove of redwoods. She pointed almost straight up to the pterodactyl on its familiar perch, and I glanced up to see the winged dinosaur watching us in return. "We need a disguise," I said as a joke, "so we can slip out without her knowing we're gone."
"She did not bother me when I got water this morning. Maybe she hunts later in the day,"
Sheila suggested. "Or maybe she learned her lesson when we threw spears at her," I said with a bit of satisfaction. Although the fact she was there at all made me think the pterodactyl believed there was a chance at getting into the cave.
"I wish I could snap my fingers and have our turnstile built for the entrance," I said, while looking up one last time. "It would make it so we didn't have to worry about her.
Perhaps when we return?
Sheila replied. Yeah. We have to risk her flying down while we're gone. It would take too long to make the cord and put all those poles together. We'll stick with food and water this morning, then everything else. I felt a bit discouraged when I thought about how much there was to do, but I was happy to get a move on.
Our journey will take us up there, Sheila said while pointing up the hill. We will follow the ridgeline above this little valley until we reach the lake where I found you. It'll be much safer than walking down the creek. The dinosaurs favor the water, even in the morning.
So we can expect trouble at the lake, I said with a little sarcasm.
Yes,
Sheila replied.
The lake always has predators lurking, but we have no real alternative.
Couldn't we walk that way, along the foot of the hill? I pointed to our left, which was the same way the creek flowed.
You think of every possibility, Sheila said. This is good. I prefer to stay on the ridgelines because the dinosaurs seem to prefer the lowlands. Not all of them, but many. This ridge has few trees and less distraction. Most animals will stay in the safety of ground cover.
Won't we be seen up there? I replied. I thought again of Bambi and what happened to his mother in the open field.
Yes,
she nodded.
But observing them from far away helps us avoid true surprise and gives us options. It is a trade-off.
My brain processed everything she said and could find no fault in her logic. Last night, those green raptor dinos had been snooping around not far from where we were now standing. The pterodactyl also refused to leave the grove. Going up onto the hill to get away from those beasts didn't seem like such a bad idea.
You want me to lead?
I asked with surprise when Sheila motioned for me to go in front of her. This was one of those times my first impulse was to let her take the lead and study what she did. Assign the task to the best player in the group and all that. But deep down, I thought it would be cool to be in charge.
To survive, we must both lead, Sheila replied. I watched when you were alone in the jungle yesterday, and you did make mistakes, but I suspect much of that was due to dehydration. If I see you about to make similar errors, I will caution you.
Thanks for the vote of confidence, I said after a deep, calming breath and an internal I'm willing to try. Learn by doing was how I lived my life before I came here. I endured high school and a little college, but most of what I learned about animals came from working with my parents in their animal hospital and not through textbooks. This was no different. I walked with Sheila following me around the rocks near the cave entrance so we could begin our ascent up the slope. A few of the big redwoods dotted the hillside in each direction, but most of the trees ahead of us were smaller and more like the elms, oaks, and regular-sized evergreens from back home. We'd run next to the same hill last night, but it had been hard to get perspective in the evening shadows. The crest of the hill was a couple hundred yards above us and went left and right as far as I could see through the trees. The slope was somewhat steep, but we didn't have to crawl or hold on to trees to pull ourselves along. The rocky hillside became exposed, and the trees thinned out as we neared the bare, windswept summit. A few lichens and mosses dotted the rocks, but not much else. The ridgeline stretched to our left and right like a dark spine, and I stopped us just before I reached the very top.
"See something?"
Sheila whispered.
"No, I didn't want to stand on the top and be seen by everyone on both sides."
I didn't explain the lesson came from video games. A million newbie players started their first-person shooter careers by standing out in the open so they could get cut down a second later.
Yes, well done, Victor. Hunters in my tribe travel along the backside of hills for that same reason. We should look over the top to ensure there are no creatures along the front side of the ridge where we intend to walk.
So you were just testing me? I smirked at her.
Perhaps.
She returned my smile and gestured for me to keep going. We crept along the rocks until we had a view over the top of the hill.
Wow,
I breathed out with awe. The far side of the hill was essentially a cliff above the ocean. We were about 100 feet above the stark blue water, and we looked out on a V-shaped bay. A dark volcanic mountain was on the left side. A jungle was on the right. Several islands hunkered on the distant horizon, including the one I briefly thought was Catalina from back home. Little clouds dotted the sky above them, and the scene was all sorts of peaceful. Except for the hordes of dinosaurs lurking in the jungle.
Why didn't you tell me the ocean would be here?
I asked with a good-natured laugh.
Some surprises are useful, she replied with a feline twinkle in her eye. Damn,
I don't care if this is a dinosaur hellscape, this world sure is beautiful. I could see for miles in every direction, except where the redwoods stood behind me. That fucking figures, I said. We live next to a damned volcano. A lone shattered mountain hugged the coastline on the left side of the bay. The greens and browns of redwoods lapped at the base, but nothing grew on the mountain itself. It would probably fit right into the Sierra Nevadas back home. But it seemed all the more impressive because it stood alone next to the water. The entire top half appeared to have been blown outward like a giant volcano had exploded. White and gray smoke belched out of the top like an industrial era factory, making me wonder if the inside was filled with lava. Gigantic black spires of shiny rock projected high above the lip of the volcano, almost looking like a clawed hand reaching out from the smog.
It is impressive, Sheila agreed. Galmine said she arrived on the planet down there on that tiny beach.
She pointed near the ocean waves below the volcano, but it was difficult to look down because the water reflected the rays of the morning sun directly into my eyes. Amazing, I said, looking away from the glare. How did she get up those cliffs? The mountain was bad enough, but the thin beach on that side of the bay was guarded by high cliffs as far as I could see.
I do not ask her a lot of questions about her time alone. As I said about Trell, each of us carries the weight of that period of fear and handles it differently. I would be wary to climb those cliffs myself. I have been to the edge, and it is too high for my...
She paused for a long moment.
Climbing abilities.
I thought of my own journey and instinctively looked to the crowded jungle on the right side of the bay. The sandy beach and rainforest where I struggled to stay alive was somewhere in front of me. As the pterosaur flies, I couldn't be too far from where I lost my shark man acquaintance.
Sorry, I can't help my curiosity, I replied. I guess I wouldn't want to talk about my trip through the jungle either, except that you already saw how mine ended.
The past is done. We must go this way.
She pointed to our right, along the spine of rock, but waited for me to go first. Now that we're on somewhat level ground, are you okay if I run? I asked.
I would do the same, she agreed.
We jogged along the ocean side of the ridgeline so we could see the forest below. We traveled for probably half an hour at that speed, only stopping to ensure nothing was sneaking up on us from the forest side of the hill. I also had to stop a few extra times in between to catch my breath. Thankfully, the only hints of trouble we encountered were distant howls, though that sound never really went away. The smell of the ocean drifted on the air when the wind blew in the proper direction. The breeze took the edge off the increasing heat of the morning and my exertion from running. It reminded me of being near the beach back home, which made it easier to block out all the things that could kill me here, just for a little while. From time to time, we'd see giant pterodactyls gliding on the wind far out over the ocean. They really were magnificent creatures, especially when they weren't trying to eat us. As we departed from the view of the bay, we saw more trees and fewer of those soaring birds. Finally, we entered what I assumed was the same jungle I'd escaped yesterday. The spine of the ridgeline went downward into the familiar choke of vines and trees, and we stuck with it until I had to stop at a jumble of white flowering vines blocking our path. It was the perfect place to catch my breath while looking for a way through.
It is not much farther, Sheila advised, hardly breathing any faster than normal.
She leaned on her spear, as she often did while talking to me.
How did you even find this place? I asked.
I had to know what was around us. I have traveled from far up the beach, Sheila said while pointing her thumb back over her shoulder. So getting a feel for the area near the cave has been an interest of mine.
How much have you explored?
From the cave, I know the grove of tall redwood trees sits in a broad valley with a stream down the middle. I consider that the north side of our territory. The volcano of cracked rock by the ocean is to the east. Beyond that is the coastline I walked to get here.
She then pointed to the rainforest to her left.
And this jungle runs to the west. I do not know how far it goes.
And to the south? I asked.
Ocean and islands. I have not explored, of course, but perhaps one day we will have time to build a boat,
Sheila said matter-of-factly. Maybe there are people out there. Or resources we can harvest, who knows? I said while thinking about that future voyage. I could barely see beyond my empty stomach and parched lips to consider building a boat. but I fantasized a bit about sailing on the water. I stood there and thought for a minute while my heart rate decreased. "Let's keep going," I said to end the brief delay. I picked my way through the white flowering vines until it was clear enough to resume our jog. My sore muscles complained about every step for most of our trip, but the morning's sharp pain was now more of a dull annoyance as my muscles got used to the activity. My uniform didn't help either, as the sweat-drenched long pants stuck to my legs or became caught in vines and brambles. When I got back to the cave, I was seriously going to look at cutting shorts out of them to make running a whole lot cooler and easier. In 10 minutes, we were deep in the thick of the jungle, and I recalled those first few hours of meeting bloodthirsty raptors and running for my life. I almost hoped to see Kelg or Heracula emerge from the vines and clogged undergrowth. Each would claim I'd fallen into some hilarious practical joke and I'd soon be on my way home. However, the useless fantasizing didn't last long. I now accepted my current situation, and this world, for what it was. In fact, getting my head straight was one of my biggest victories so far. Reliving the landing reminded me how lucky I was to fall into the laps of 3 beautiful women. And I couldn't overlook I was already back in the same jungle, armed and a little less afraid. The shark man might even say I was dangerous now. That made me smile for a moment. I was glad to have known him, even for those few minutes.
"The lake is just up ahead," Sheila said after running for a little while longer. "I will lead for a couple of minutes so I can show you where we need to go, okay?"
"I'll be right behind you," I said. I was proud that I'd gotten us there, but this was one of those times when experience trumped everything else, including my ego. She was a regular at the lake and made killing a giant croc look easy.
"Those are places we must avoid,"
she cautioned when we tore through vines and walked around flat areas which reeked of urine.
"I suspect they are mating areas. We do not want a smell of animal pheromones."
I thought of Galmine's dizzying scent, and could imagine the consequences of being that enticing to a dinosaur. She eventually brought us to a familiar-looking 10-foot cliff. We walked along the edge for about 75 feet before reaching a little waterfall spilling over into the jungle below us. That's when I recognized it was the same creek I'd used to guide me up and out of the lower part of the jungle. Just before I dunked my head in the lake and almost had it taken off by the giant croc.
"There is the body of the crocodile,"
Sheila said as if reading my thoughts. We were now on the opposite shore of the little lake, but the corpse of the huge monster was impossible to miss. It remained where she'd struck it dead at the edge of the water. However, it did look as if it had been visited by the steak knife salesman. Something big had come along and turned it over so its belly faced the sky. Then the scavenger must have sliced the dead croc's stomach wide open and made it into a serving dish. Blood and bones were splashed randomly all over the muddy bank. In spite of having been gutted, some meat must have been left on the bones, because small, dog-sized dinosaurs nosed through the carcass. They were miniature versions of the green-feathered raptors I knew so well, but their feathers were almost all black. Sheila guided us through some tall marsh grasses on our side of the lake so the little black dinos couldn't see us. I was sort of sad to see the body being picked apart, but obviously I was stoked it wasn't me lying over there. I glanced ahead to Sheila's athletic frame, thankful she saved me from that horrible fate. She'd given me a second chance at this world. We walked for a few minutes before I realized the lake was much larger than I remembered. The small pond where the crocodile and I met was one cove of a much larger body of water. Now that I was safely on the shore and not dying of dehydration, I saw the lake beyond. Sheila guided us along the confusing bends of the jungle shoreline until we arrived at a thin slice of water about 20 feet wide.
"We can be somewhat safe here," she said as she crouched near the water.
About 50 feet away, there was a narrow passage leading to the main lake. That construction made our little cove very private from the open waterside, and I glanced around us to ensure there were no animals. The dense jungle pressed in from all sides, giving us a bit of privacy on the shore, and I figured that a dino would have to stumble through the trees before it would see us. The undergrowth stopped a few feet before it met the water, giving us a way to walk around the cove. I stood next to Sheila on the red clay shore and poked my spear in the water several times. When I was satisfied no crocs were hiding, I got down on my knees and dipped my hat. It had too many seams to hold water for very long, but it was still better than using my hands. and I sure as hell wasn't ready to stick my face in. I yanked it out, took a quick drink, and poured the rest on my head. "I'm in heaven," I said, while trying to forget that I was in a sick amusement park called Dinosaur Land. However, I couldn't forget for long because I had endless worries. Galmine was probably only on her second leaf, which wasn't her fault, but it put pressure on me to think of ways to speed her up. Getting to the lake took longer than I expected. I was already starting to worry about how we were going to get firewood and then dinner tonight.
"It was a good idea bringing the pot for more water," Sheila said, now kneeling at the water's edge next to me.
"I appreciate that you went out and got it the first time today," I said. "If I knew the lake was this far, I might have drunk Trell's portion before she could come out and insult me." I turned to gauge the Catwoman's response, but she seemed distracted for a moment.
"May I borrow that?"
she finally said, while looking at my sopping wet Outback hat. I passed it over, and she did the same thing I'd done. She dipped it in the water, took a drink, then poured the remainder over her head.
"Refreshing,"
she declared, before passing the drippy hat back to me. While on her knees, she used both of her hands to brush back her wet and wild hair, looking every bit like she belonged at Lacey's pool party. I couldn't help but marvel at how attractive she was.
"Trell was correct about something, you know," she said dryly.
"This should be hilarious," I said with a touch of anxiety.
"She described you as easy to read, which you are. To her, that is a flaw. I, however, prefer strong males who see what they want and do what they must do to take it. And I see you looking at me, Victor."
"Looking at you?" I asked with concern as I got my hat back on. I never expected an alien like Sheila to notice me, but all of a sudden I knew I was going to get the very Earth-like, "You aren't my type," speech.
"You look at Galmon and Trell just the way you look at me. I know why you do it," she said in an even tone.
My heartbeat was an untamed Mustang while I waited for her to keep talking.
"You desire sexual fulfillment," she said in a sympathetic tone. "It is in your eyes when you look at each of us. Trell, for instance, confuses and excites you. I do not know why she behaves that way around you. Galmine, however, hides nothing," she continued. "While we have known you only a short time, you've shown yourself to be honorable and kind. That is enough for her to want to know you better. I believe you would find her most receptive to your desires."
I considered what Galmine said in my ear last night and wondered if the two women talked about it before I woke up. I rubbed my head and peered into the water, hoping the next words out of her mouth would be what I wanted to hear. Sure, Galmine's curves were hot beyond words, and Trell was, well, gorgeous and deadly in one convenient package. But Sheila was a health magazine cover physical trainer kind of sexy that was well beyond my wildest fantasies back home. Just listening to the all-business warrior woman talk about sex while we were in a danger-filled jungle was making my heart race.
"As for me, while I appreciate your interest in my body, I cannot act on such attraction because I'm married."
Okay, I quickly said, even though my chest was saying, "Well, fuck."
"I'm glad you understand."
Sheila didn't look at me. Instead, she got busy filling the pot with water. Then she stood up and carried it away like nothing had just happened. I was left with my thoughts as the water rippled across the surface of the pond. By the time the ripples were gone, I'd taken comfort that her being married was a pretty good reason to reject me. I would respect her values and keep my head up high. And she did mention Galmine had an interest in me. That was a walk-off home run in itself, but I couldn't even think about it until I was safe back in the cave. "All right, let's get some breakfast," I said as I got to my feet. It bugged me that we had to get into the water to jab a spear at the fish. Fishing with hand grenades would be more appropriate for this world. Perhaps with a little time we could make a fishing pole, string together a net, or figure out how to create one of those fish basket things I'd seen on those survival shows. Could a bow and arrow be used for fishing? Anything but stepping into the same water with prehistoric crocodiles. Thankfully, the water was shallow enough we could see the shapes of fish pretty easily and confirm there were no big predators in our cozy cove.
"I'll stand over there and we'll work toward each other," Sheila said as she walked down the shore a little way. She went waist-deep into the water with a small splashing sound that didn't seem to startle any of the fish. I did my best to be equally stealthy and got to about the same depth in the warm water, but had to move a few steps in her direction to get out of the shallows. When we were both in position, I gave her a thumbs up and she pointed down to let me know she was ready. She held her spear in a cocked throwing position and then froze like a statue. I mirrored her and watched the bottom for movement. Our statuesque fishing stance dragged on to minutes as we were waiting for one of the fishes to swim near us. Across the lake, a mixed herd of duck-billed, human-sized dinosaurs tugged at leaves, rolled in the mud, and warily poked their heads in the water. Another group of elephant-sized dinos with funny-shaped tubular crests splashed at the water's edge like kids at the beach. They were at least 200 yards away, so I didn't think they could see us, but I stayed alert just in case. I finally saw movement below me. A big, fat fish flashed its reflective scales under the sunlight, and I got a good look at it. Then I jabbed my spear into the 3-foot-deep water and aimed for that shimmer.
"Holy shit, I hit something!"
I said, almost at a shout. I pulled up a dinner-plate-sized, light-colored fish that had huge teeth. My first impression was that I caught a piranha, and I almost dashed out of the water. Didn't they travel in schools? Was I being surrounded by others? Would they be drawn by the blood of their own kind? "Are these what's in the lake?" I asked while pushing back the irrational fear. We'd been fine the whole time, and Sheila said nothing about flesh-eating fish.
"Yes, they're common. There's some reddish-striped fish that I've caught also, but those are more common in our little stream," she replied.
"Do they all have teeth like this?" The fish I held had a mouth full of razors, a lot like Heracula's knife-like set. As daunting as the teeth were, the rest of the fish was pretty ordinary. It reminded me of those decorative fish tank species that were as tall as they were long. This one was about a foot long and had some meat to it. Definitely not a catch-and-release. I had to get out of the water to set it down. I tore a big leaf off one of the nearby plants and used it as a drop cloth. The spear had gone in almost right smack in the middle, and the wound was now a bloody mess. Since I didn't have a knife or sharp rock handy to kill the fish, I used the spear again to end its suffering. "First blood," I said to Sheila, repeating a phrase I'd heard many times in video games. As I walked back into the water, Sheila speared her own fish. It was one of the red kind and was about twice as long as mine, but a lot thinner. She came out of the water and put hers next to mine. I ignored her wet body while I set up for my next attempt. Fishing was serious business, and I wanted to prove my first catch wasn't a fluke.
"Second blood,"
she replied as she humanely dispatched it, perhaps not understanding my words. My beginner's luck ended after the first fish. I made several thrusts to hit the movements below me, but I missed each time. Sheila, on the other hand, landed 4 more of the whitefish in the next half hour. "I think we have enough to head back. We still have a lot of shit to work on. What do you think?" I reassured myself I wasn't a sore loser. Sheila didn't even know I was trying to beat her. We had plenty of fish for this outing, and we had to get back. On our next trip, I would let her do the fishing while I did one of my other tasks.
"I am ready, yes,"
she said in a hushed voice. I could tell she was stalking another fish, so I didn't push her. "I'll get the clay," I replied. That would be the easiest assignment of the morning. The whole cove was nothing but red clay dirt and mud. I crouched by the pile of fish and tipped over the empty food pot. It was easy to see the pot came from this spot since the red dirt of the shore matched it exactly. I used my hands to scoop in some clay mud and pack it to the brim so it looked a lot like a flower pot filled with soil. Eventually, we could make a shitload of these pots to grow our own food, and another big problem would be solved. I was excited at having thought of one more tech advancement, but we were a long way from those technological developments. Deep down, I guess I hoped Trell was right, and help would soon be here. But I believed Sheila even more. We had to plan as if rescue was never coming. Sheila made a grunting sound as she speared another fish. I watched her lift the white shark-mouthed catch out of the water and marveled again at her beautiful, fuzzy body.
"Gee, you caught another,"
I said with playful sarcasm as she approached.
"I think it's safe to say you're the master fisherwoman in our tribe. Give me that fish and I'll string all of them to this cord so we can carry them."
I pulled the rope from my pocket and once again avoided looking at her soaking bikini bottom.